So my guest today is Kim Kakonnell, Vice President and Head of Global Digital Supply Chain and Finance at Kimberly-Clark. In this pivotal role, Kim is driving technology enablement for the Kimberly-Clark Global Supply Chain, the finance organization, and digital operations on a global scale. Her current role is ensuring the successful delivery of the Aurora Transformation Program. With a career spanning nearly two decades within a single organization, Kim's inspiring journey serves as a testament to her commitment, learning agility, and exceptional leadership skills. Without further ado, I'm going to dive into Kim's amazing journey. Hi, Kim. A very warm welcome to Atlanta Diaries, and thank you for taking out time.
Thank you for inviting me. I really appreciate the invite. So this is a great opportunity.
Awesome. A career spanning nearly two decades within the same organization. Were you always set on the corporate path? Or do you think it was happenstance?
No, it was actually a happenstance because I was working as a graduate assistant at a university at the time teaching college classes. And one of the university professors said, hey, Scott Paper is hiring. And they actually called him about the job and asked him if he knew anybody. And he recommended that I go out and interview. And I was not looking for a job at the time. I was even thinking about maybe I'll get my doctorate. And I went through a day's worth of interviews and they offered me the job that day. And I was kind of like, well, okay, I was still teaching at night. Then I switched my class schedule because it was during the summers. But I never imagined at the time that I would have a corporate job.
Then what was the turning point which allowed you to pivot from teaching to the corporate world?
So I was actually having those opportunities to see the impact I was making. I was building things, creating systems, actually applying them on the manufacturing lines or building things for sale. So once you start building systems and seeing what benefits they're providing the company, the impact that you're making on people and the people's lives is what makes the difference. And when you're teaching a class, I don't know if you get that thrill, you know, because you don't know what happens afterwards, you know. So it was more of that that really got me wanting to stay in the corporate world. And just the opportunities that Kimberly-Clark gave me across the way, I was constantly learning different areas, different systems, different technology, and just growing. So that's why I've been on this journey with Kimberly-Clark for so long.
Awesome. Looks like the why in this world was more compelling for you versus the why in the teaching world. So let's backtrack a little bit, Kim, and share with us, how did your early years shape the trajectory of your career?
When I started at Kimberly-Clark, I actually got hired by a woman and she provided me some very challenging assignments right off the board. And we started rolling out a system across all of Scott Paper Company at the time. So she put me in charge of a team. At the time, I didn't see myself as a leader, but it was more of, hey, I think you can do this. Give it a shot. So there was women probably all throughout my journey at Kimberly-Clark and Scott Paper Company that really inspired me to be a leader. If it wasn't for women encouraging me, I probably wouldn't be where I am today. And that's been critical for me. And I can name a few stories about several of the women that helped me.
Love to hear.
Probably halfway through my career, I had the opportunity to do an organizational redesign. And in that, I reported into a VP of HR. And she was fantastic. She really had a high-performing team. Their entire team worked together so well. It wasn't a competitive environment. They were all about one goal. And she created that family environment. And when she'd have her one-on-ones with me, she'd take me outside and we walked around the lake and we had some discussions that way. So she really gave me a different way of thinking about leadership and how she worked with the enterprise leadership team. So I had the opportunity to go into their meetings and see how they operated and work on board decks for her. So I never ever thought before that point that I could aspire to be a leader, because you always think they must be so much smarter than me, but then you realize they're human beings just like you and me. Yeah, they've had good education, made some good choices, but it's not that it's not attainable, right? If you make the right steps and take the right opportunities, a lot of people can get there. They just made the right decisions to get to where they were in life. And it was just neat to spend time with them and realizing the journeys that they went through. And it wasn't simple for them to get to where they were either.
You know, this reminds me of one story you shared last time, how Vice President identified you for the role of an AI expert. Share with us that story and then tell us, what do you think has enabled your growth thus far?
Yeah, so that story was really, really early on. I had been working at Scott Paper Company probably maybe 6 months. And one of the things I did when I was at the university is I studied expert systems and artificial intelligence. And I was in a meeting at one of the manufacturing sites. The VP came in, and when the VP comes in, they clean everything and they paint everything, and it's such a big deal. And I had the opportunity to be in one of his meetings. There was probably like 30 or 40 of us in a room. I was in the room with engineers, and he was talking about the expert systems and why weren't we doing expert systems at the mill? We were investing instead on data collectors and doing a process quality control system. And he didn't understand why we were making the investment there instead of expert systems. And the room got quiet. No one had an answer. And I kind of raised my hand and spoke up and explained to him what an expert system was and why we needed the data collection. Afterwards, they gave me the, I can't believe you talked to a vice president like you knew more than he did about a topic, and that probably wasn't a good idea, and hopefully you'll have a job tomorrow. So the very next day, I come to work, and I get called to the manager's office. So it's like, oh, I guess they're right. I'm like, I might not be having a job after this. So I go into his office, and the vice president had somebody there, and he said, I want to get a picture with you. I'm going to do a newsletter. And I want to talk about you and how you brought insight and you weren't afraid to speak up. And I want to make you the expert for expert systems and AI for Scott Paper Company. I want you to travel to the mills and do some discussion groups with them, understand what they're doing, and help us map out a path to what we can do to get there. So it was definitely a major career changing moment for me, because then I had the opportunity to visit all the plants and then do discussion groups with them. And we put together roadmaps of what we needed to put in place to build that expert system. And if it wasn't for that moment, that journey probably wouldn't happen. When Kimberly-Clark came in and purchased Scott Paper Company, they wanted that in Kimberly-Clark too. So that held me on my journey to Kimberly-Clark.
I love that. So which trait of yours do you think helped him to see the potential in you?
Yeah, and I think women sometimes are afraid to speak up, are uncomfortable, or don't have the confidence. And maybe I was naive at the time, but ever since that point in my career, I've always felt like, hey, if you've got an opinion, you need to share it and try to figure out how to share it in the right way. And I'm not saying any share every bad thought you have or anything like that, but if you've got an idea, bring that idea to the table. Or if you do have a concern, bring it up in a constructive way. But I think women need to have confidence in themselves. I've always taken the approach, like, what's the worst thing that can happen? Like, even if you were to lose your job, there's other jobs out there. You shouldn't be afraid to take a chance, right? Take a chance on yourself. Because every chance I've taken during my career, I've always started out with that point of, am I doing the right thing? Do I really know what I'm doing? But then you kind of buckle down and try to learn it to the best of your ability, and you bring your own self to that. So it might not have been exactly the way somebody else did it before you, and it's different, but it could be different better. You can bring your own flavor to the party and make it even better than it was before. So the reason they switch out leadership sometimes is to get different perspectives. So they are looking for you to bring your perspective in. So don't be afraid to share it. So that's what I would recommend to women everywhere. Like, please don't be afraid. Just get out there and share your insights and your whole self on the job. I've had people come into my office, tell me all the things they can't do. And I'm always like, okay, I've heard everything you can't do. Tell me what you can't do. And let's take those steps there, because any progress is better than no progress at all.
So, you know, I'm going to double click on this. Early on, it was naivety, which allowed you to be this bold self. Any anecdotes come to your mind where you took that chance and maybe sometimes didn't see enough success?
So the regrets I typically have is not sharing something because I felt like I didn't know exactly how to word it or phrase it in such a way that it wouldn't be turned into negative or controversial, because you're trying to bring something to the table in a positive light. There's some of the tricks that people have told me, instead of sharing it, you ask people questions to help them think about it in a different light. If you have some doubts on what somebody's bringing, you can say, well, tell me how you thought about this in a positive way, so that way we can make sure that we're covering this risk to the program. Or if someone's being extremely negative to you, and I've seen people do that in a meeting, and how do you come in and not be defensive? is share some other ideas in a positive light. For example, I've had some programs that went off the rails and haven't went well. And so you kind of admit like, hey, yes, we recognize this isn't going well, but here's what we're going to do to change things. Like, hey, we've learned from that. We made a mistake. We acknowledge we've made a mistake. And here's steps A, B, and C. But I would always tell you, come prepared to a meeting to make those statements and think through it. And that's when I've had my biggest regrets, is because I haven't thought about that before the meeting. I come into the meeting, I'm cold. You come in cold and you don't know all the topics and you're not ready and prepared, and certain things happen. You're like, oh, dang it, I don't have that information prepared. So if you've got a big meeting like that, really take the time ahead of time to reflect and think about some of the topics that may come up and how can you be prepared to make your big points, because that could lead to the next opportunity somewhere down the line for you of just being recognized by the right person at the right time.
Very candid and honest advice. You know, your role is such that you obviously work with so many different stakeholders. How do you build trust with so many stakeholders?
Yeah, building trust is all about commitment and delivering on your commitments. So I've learned early on in my career, like if I said I was going to do something, you make sure you follow up or be honest with them. Like if somebody asks you to do something, they want you to do it in 2 weeks, you'd be like, okay, yeah, that's not happening. Here's what I can do in 2 weeks. But if you want me to do all of this, it's going to take 6 weeks, and then kind of lay out the steps for them to understand why and then the risk along the way. So that way, if any of these risks do come up, unintended things that you didn't have in your plan, at least you said X, Y, or Z happens. This could take another 3 weeks, you know, but here's what I'm going to try to do to make sure that doesn't happen. And then as you become a leader and leader of leaders, it gets even more difficult, because when you're just that first level leader in the team, you have real good visibility. Because I've had leaders come to me and tell me that they can do something, for example, oh, we can get that done in 3 months. And I'm logically, I'm like, do all that in 3 months, let's talk through it. And the biggest regrets I've had sometimes is when people come to me and say, oh, yeah, that's no problem, 3 months. And in the back of my mind, I'm like, that sounds like a 6 month thing to me. And we have the discussion and they're really, really confident about it. So then we commit to the 3 months. And then most of the time when I'm like that, I'll be like, I'm probably going to tell them four months. But then when it goes to the 6 months and I'm really disappointed in me and my team member, like, hey, we committed and now we're going to lose trust because we made a commitment to do something. So what I've always told people, like the minute you realize that you're not going to make it, you need to notify the person, because your credibility is going to go down the tubes as you go. So really think through those commitments, because that's what builds trust. And you're better off being honest. If you can be more realistic and authentic and have those tough conversations, you're going to do a much better job building trust than just taking an order like, oh, okay, yeah, sure, we'll do that, and agreeing to something that's not possible.
Yeah. You know, I'm hearing two things. One is to build the trust with the other stakeholders and so on. And the other is to make sure that within your team, you keep that accountability. Often as leaders, we feel, okay, they'll do the job on their own, and then you reconnect after 3 months when it's too late.
Yeah. Before you sign your team up for something, you better check in with them.
Yeah.
Because I've seen leaders do that too. Like, oh, yeah, we can have that for you in 3 months. But I mean, I've been in meetings where people want me to commit to something. I'm like, no, I need to check with my leaders, make sure that this is doable. One, you don't know what they've already committed to, what other work the team's doing. You've really got to make sure you've got a solid plan together before you make those commitments. And that's vital, because that, like I said, biggest thing that can deteriorate trust is your inability to deliver on your commitments. That really will break it down like that.
Completely, yeah. I am very fascinated by all the leaders who have been sports enthusiasts and have been in competitive sports. And given that you were a national level tennis player, how did your athletic journey help you in your leadership journey?
Yeah, I think athletics, especially I think for women, because it gives you that competitive spirit. I think a lot of women aren't taught to compete or what it takes to win or success. And then the other thing about playing sports is strategy. Because when I played tennis, you always have to check and adjust. If you play your game and play the same game and the person's playing better or they're winning and you're doing the same thing, it's like, it's not going to work. Same thing in the business world. You've got a competitor, you've got to look at what they're doing, and then what are we going to do strategy-wise to beat them? So And I think that's why you do see a lot of women leaders that have played sports, because they do understand like how to compete, how to win, and how to be a team player. For example, one of my partners, he was a really good net player and I'm a little shorter, so I had to play back. And so it was all about how do I set her up so that way she can put the ball away type things. So even as you're in the corporate world, you have team players. Some are probably better at the strategy part of the job. And some people that work for me have very, very good communicators, very strong communication skills and presenting ideas. And then others are very technical and they're going to come up with the how to get things done. And some are going to build the big picture. So how do you leverage all those skills to then make a high performing team and appreciate it? Well, like if everybody's doing the same thing exactly the same way, you're not going to get a high performing team.
Shifting gears a little bit, is Boys Club a reality? And did you encounter gender biases in your journey?
Yeah, and this is an interesting thing because I would say early on in my career, there was a lot of Boys Club. Like it definitely was, but I don't see that anymore. I haven't seen it in years, but I do see it when I go to conferences. So I don't think within Kimberly-Clark, I don't feel the Boys Club thing. Maybe like when I worked for Scott early on, there was a lot of Boys Club stuff going on. And I did have some experiences early on in my career when I was just getting to the leadership table. I think I was the only woman at the time that was at that level. When I first joined the first big meeting, we were having some strategic conversations about technology. After the meeting, I kept trying to interject and add my ideas. And one of the guys pulled me aside at the end of the meeting and kind of let me know, hey, I'm still at the kids table and I got to work my way up to the big boys table or whatever. He made this whole speech about the table and I'm not at the table yet. And I've got to earn my stripes to get to the table. And at first I was like, man, do I even want to work with these guys? Like, this is terrible. And then I'm like, no, I'm not going to let them beat me. And this is probably where that whole athletic competition thing comes in. Like, if I give up now, that's letting them win. Like, no, I'm not going to let them win. They're not going to make me back off and not have a seat at the table, right? So I'm just going to get in there and prove to them that I'm worthy and that I have good ideas and I can contribute and they do have to listen to me. So I just kept pushing. And over the next couple of years, they either retired or left the company and I continued to thrive. So I would tell women, don't give up. If that is happening to you, don't let them discourage you because that's just their way of shutting you down so they can shine. Like, don't let them outshine you, you know, like you just keep in there. That's what I felt like at the time. They were trying to shut me down and make me be quiet, go sit in the corner and don't say anything. But that was a long time ago. I guess that's been many, many years. I haven't experienced anything like that. If you look at Kimberly-Clark, we're a great mix between men and women and a lot of diversity. It should be a mixture of the two because women bring some ideas to the table that men just don't think about.
So Kimberly as a person and Kimberly as a leader, are they similar? Are they different? How would you compare them?
Now, I would say that I pretty much am my authentic self, both at home and at the workplace. Maybe too much, maybe too authentic at times. But I don't change that much because I feel like Kimberly, the person who has four children and a family, I learned a lot from my family that then I can bring to the workplace. And then I learned things at the workplace that make me reflect on how I'm raising my children or treating my children. So that's why I feel like over a while, they all kind of blend together. For example, when you're raising children, all your children are different. None of them are the same. I have four children. Not a single one of them is the same personality, same thinking style or anything like that. And the same thing with my team. They're all different. You got to treat them all different. They all have different needs. You got to help them develop and grow based on what their needs are, right? So if you treat them all the same, you're not going to get the right outcome. So you have to understand that to make sure that they're getting what they need to grow in their career or grow as a person, you know, as into an adult. I really feel like Kim, the personal side of Kim and the leadership side is pretty much the same Kim.
Yeah. In fact, how did you strike that balance?
Yeah, you got to set your boundaries, right? And my priorities have always been children, family first, work second, right? Like if I need to be there, my children need me to be at something, I need to be there. Like I've had some important meetings that I've said, you got to move the meeting a day or I can't be there because, for example, my daughter has her end of the year dance recital and I'm not going to miss her dance recital. She's been working all year for that. But then you've got to make sure you're valuing your time and kind of prioritize your time. So what's important to you? So like I said, whatever the children needed was important to me. I'm very big about exercising and taking care of myself. So I'm like, I got a lot of time for that and a lot of time for work. So the time at work, whatever time I am spending at work, I can make sure is being put to good use. Especially if you're a leader, you don't need to be everywhere all the time. I think some people have that fear of missing out, that FOMO. Now everybody's got to know everything about everything. Like I say, okay, you own that. You got it. If you need me, you come talk to me type thing. So I think it's all about prioritizing your time. I mean, sometimes it got a little haywire because you had a big project or something going on. But I would say the majority of the time, I was always there for the kids. And I think you can have those discussions with your boss. Like, so when you are taking a new opportunity, saying, hey, I'll take this opportunity, but here's my priorities. I've had several opportunities where I could have moved to a different location, but I knew my kids or my husband weren't comfortable with it, and I'd prioritize them first over that. The other thing is people think if you work a regular job, it's a 40-hour, 50-hour. You work, most of these people work in 40, 50 hours. Same thing as a leader. It's just you're doing different roles. I don't know why people think being a leader is going to take that much more from you. So that's why I want to make sure all women know that you can make it work. It's not going to be a drain on your life and it's not unattainable.
So your academic journey was more sciences, yet you talk about very powerful leadership skills. So I'm just wondering, were you intentional about building those leadership skills? Because fear of missing out, not micromanaging, those are things which don't come easily, right? In fact, I work with so many clients where the whole challenge is, I don't have any time for myself. So I don't know if that resonated with you and what's your perspective?
It totally resonates with me. I've had a great opportunity with Kim and Clark because they do send you to leadership training. And every time I went to leadership training, I've had an aha moment. The first one we did was they do a color wheel where you determine your color and then how your color, like a red is direct, a yellow is enjoys people, green's caring, blue is very detailed, and you try to understand all your colors. And so the first time I did that training and sat down with my team, I was like, and your opposite color is kind of like not good, like you guys might be in conflict. And sat down with them like, geez, I'm probably driving you crazy.
I'm so
you know, like I am your opposite and the way I operate is probably making you like, you're moving too fast. You need to slow down. I need time. And so just that kind of training made me realize like, man, I got to start thinking about the impact I'm having on my team being successful, because the only way I'm successful is if they're successful. And if I'm not helping them be successful, then this offer, it's a mute point. You know, what's the point? And I think that's important in your career to always be learning, like learning from your mistakes. Like I know I was making mistakes and I acknowledged it with her because she was very, very detailed and I'm very driven, want to go fast. And she needs time to process and think through things and line it all out. And then I probably wasn't providing her enough direction and detail. So you really got to understand each person's needs so that way you can be a successful leader. The other one, we've done this whole culture of accountability. Like a lot of people don't put enough emphasis on themselves, right? Like I'm going to work and burning out. The harder I work, the better I am type thing. And they've learned that if you're not taking care of yourselves, like getting enough sleep, getting some exercise, you're not your best person. And if you're not your best person at work, you're not going to be nice to your coworkers. You're not going to come up with good ideas. So even that training was like, wow, I need to make sure, because I've always been one to, I need to take care of my health, but it even made it more important, you know, like when I travel, I need to make sure I get up and get on the treadmill or, you know, do some kind of exercise. If not, I'm going to go in the meeting and not give my best self. So it really goes back to, no, you're not doing the best thing for the company by overworking yourself. The best thing for the company is taking care of yourself, not burning yourself out.
That's really great advice. Yeah. But a lot of vulnerability. Shifting gears a little bit, Kim, any naysayers in your journey as it continues?
Yes. Interesting. In my career, I've had people come up to me afterwards, like after knowing me for a while, and then they tell me, for example, what they thought of me when they first met me. And so one man, when he was leaving the company, bought me a gift before he left the company saying that before he met me, he didn't think women really knew technology. He said, but you've proved me wrong along the way. And I just wanted to tell you what the impact that you made for me. And I was like, geez, I never know you felt that way. Like, you really felt that way about women? And I've even had women come up to me, like when I first met you, you're a tiny little girl. Like, you know, they even told me that I had low expectations about your abilities and you've really proved me wrong and stuff like that. So it really made me realize people have biases, like the minute they meet you, et cetera. When you talk about imposter syndrome, I often put myself in roles that I didn't know what I was doing. So I took an opportunity and went to work for a man who really didn't think a lot about me, but his boss told him to take me on. So when he took me on, I think he was like, yeah, she's not going to make it. And there for the first month or so, I was like, yeah, I'm probably not going to make it. I even told my husband at one point, I don't know if I'm going to make it. I'm still trying to figure it out and I'm struggling. But within a couple of months after meeting with people, listening, and I think that's key when you get into a new role, spend a lot of time listening. Like, what are the ways you can make a big win or impact? And what are the big problems that people are having that you could go in and start chipping away at to then solve? And so for me in the strategy role, they didn't have a good process in place to build the strategy and the prioritization process. So I got in there, started working with the team, started using everybody's ideas to build a new process, held a workshop, got them all together. And the guy who didn't think much of me at the time, now to this day, he's a big fan. He was actually recommending me for big jobs. So everybody feels uncomfortable in a new job. You don't have to have all the answers. The people have the answers. You just got to help get it out of them. I'm sure Bill Gates, he didn't have all the answers his entire life.
So what I'm hearing actually is courage.
That's what I always ask myself. Like, I get into things and I'm like, what's the worst thing that can happen to me? And I'm sure if you've got some pretty solid skills, you can find another job if that's the worst thing that's going to happen to you. You know, everything happens for a reason. So if you're in one spot and you're not happy, don't be afraid to move on and try something new or try something different. I had a lady working for me. She wanted to be a programmer and she was a terrible programmer. I had her do training one time and she was a fantastic trainer, but she really, really wanted to be a programmer. So we kept trying to give her a shot at programming, but she could never complete any of her stuff on time. And at the end of the, I guess it was probably a year when we were doing a performance review, I was like, have you ever thought about training? Like, you're a fantastic trainer. So she ended up quitting our company. And then 6 months later, I ran into her. She's like, you wouldn't believe what I'm doing now. And I'm like, what? She's like, I'm training. And it's a fantastic experience. You're right. That's what I should have been doing all along. And she ended up being a manager at this company. And she's still doing training and stuff like that. But that was her passion.
Yeah. You know, you have spoken about a lot of uncomfortable situations. You were very quickly able to reframe the perspective or write another story around it. So I'm just wondering, what was it that gave you that strength?
When I get negative feedback, and I think we talked about this, I'm like, wow, that's hurtful, you know? And I come home, I talk to my husband about it and complain to him about the whole thing. But by the end of it, I've got it off my chest. And then I'm like, okay, that's their perception. That's the way they perceive me. So what am I going to do about it? Everybody has that moment of hurt or frustration, et cetera. And then you can wallow in your pity for, I don't know, 30 minutes, an hour, a day, depending on how bad the situation is. But then at the end of the day, I'm always like, okay, it is what it is. Now I got to go fix it. I think that's just my natural inclination to want to fix people's problems, which isn't always a good thing because people sometimes don't want you to fix their problem. And that's the other thing I've learned as a leader is just because someone comes to you with a problem doesn't mean they want you to fix it. Sometimes they just want you to listen and encourage, right? And you've got to identify that as a leader of when to get in there and try to solve and when to back off.
So you would feel like a victim, but you wouldn't let that last too long.
Oh, yeah. Everybody has that moment. You wouldn't be human if you didn't have that moment where you felt sorry for yourself. I mean, I have moments where I'm like, wow, that's terrible. Or I just want to shut my office for a minute and sit down and like feel sorry for myself and then be like, okay, it's all good. Get in the right frame of mind. And I actually tell my team when I'm having a bad day, like, I've had a bad day.
Yeah.
So I'll be a better person tomorrow. So I might not be the best person in this moment, but and I'll let them know. So too, I think you should let people know if you're not in the right frame of mind or you're worried about your family, your kids, your father, your dog, whatever it is. Like if you've got something that's not making you be your best self, you should probably tell people. So like, hey, I'm not my best self today.
Yeah.
Don't bring me anything bad. So that way, when I am my best self, I can come and process it for you and be a better person.
So reflecting on your journey thus far, are there any mistakes that you've made? And with the wisdom of hindsight, how would you do them differently?
Yeah, I think the biggest mistake that I regretted one time was holding someone back. So this is really early in my career as a team leader. We were on this big project and this girl working for me wanted to go work on another project or program. And I was like, I can't afford to lose you. It's going to set us back 3 months. So the problem with that is at that point, that person disengages, right? Because they're not happy you held them back. So pretty much I would have been better off just letting her go. And I learned my lesson that one time. So anytime anybody's ready to make a move, and even my leaders will be complaining like, oh, I can't lose so-and-so. Everybody is replaceable. It might be really painful. And I always tell them like, I know it's going to be painful. But at this point, the one thing I've learned is when people are ready to move on, you need to let them move on and you need to help them move on and encourage them to move on. And the best thing that you can do by helping them move on is ask them to help you train their successor up. Like, hey, you can move on. So it's really important that you don't hold people back, that you're always trying to push them forward and you're not trying to protect yourself, right? I was trying to protect myself in the project instead of doing what's best for them. So I had that one time in my career. I'm like, I'll never, never do that again. That was probably the biggest regret in my whole career was holding someone back.
So what are your joys as a leader?
People, like seeing people grow, develop, get big roles. Like I told you earlier, my biggest regret was holding someone back. Now when I see someone that worked for me and then they get to the director or they get to a vice president role or I've helped someone, or even now that some of these people I've worked with in the past and kind of rooted on are now my peers. And I'm like, wow, that's fantastic. Or even when my teams get to celebrate like a huge go live or they overcame a big challenge and we get to celebrate it at the end. That's when I have a big joy, when we all can say, wow, that was really hard and look where we've gotten through this journey. It's really the team success, people's success. That's what gives me joy.
So how will you define Kim as a leader? Or if somebody else had to speak on your behalf, what do you think they'll say?
Oh, that's interesting. I've always wanted to hear, you know, because you always take these personality tests and they tell you what you are, but I'd rather have somebody do the test for me and tell me what they think I am, because there's probably who I think I am.
Yeah.
I would say that, and Kim and Clark as a culture is a very caring culture, but we're trying to be what they call performance-driven culture. So I'm definitely someone, as you can tell, likes to achieve and be successful, but I want to do it in a way that's very caring for the people, like not burning you out, doing it in a healthy way, right? We're having the healthy conversations of what needs to get done. So I would definitely say that, because for me, it's about enabling my team. It's not about me. It's about what roadblocks they have along the way and what can I do to clear the roadblocks for them. And then the other thing I've learned along the way is I don't have all the answers and I'm not the smartest person in the room. It's more about me facilitating that and helping them all bring it all together, share it with each other. And I'm always looking for a win-win. Like it's not always I have to win. It's how do we, like if it's I have one idea, somebody else has an idea, how do we make a win-win out of the situation? So those were the qualities that I would say define me of what I am. As, and I'm hoping that's what everybody would say. It'd be interesting. I would love to hear my team, what they would say.
Yeah. I want to refer to the McKinsey report, which talks about the fact that at the entry level, the women on the workforce is very large, but as they grow higher up, as they pick up leadership positions, the representation of women, and especially women of color, drops significantly. How would you encourage women, therefore, to not give up?
I think people tend to give up because they are trying to put their family first. A lot of women are like, well, I can't do this because I got to be home for my kids, or I got to be there for my family or my mother or father, et cetera. And so we tend to be caregivers. And because of that, we think we're going to sacrifice the career and that sacrificing the career will help us. But I'm telling you, you can do it. You can do both. Don't think you can't do it without at least trying or having the conversation. Give it a shot. Don't shut yourself out of the race before you even got to the start line. Like at least get to the start line and start running to try to complete the race. Or a lot of times when women start having children, they think that they've lost time and the man got ahead, so they're more deserving. And that's not true. I never let that hold me back. And it's not probably any more hours than you're working today if you do it right. You focus on the things that are important. And anything that's not important, take it off the list and enable your team. Like, use the people on your team instead of you having to be the center of attention or having to make call the shots. But if you enable them, then you'll probably have the time to do both.
Yeah. Kim, what kind of time off did you take when your kids happened?
Didn't have to take too much time off, I'll be honest with you. I only took a couple months off with each one. I didn't take a long time off. The way I managed it is I have a nanny come in at home for the first couple of years, and then I send them to school. That's how I managed it. When I was having kids, it was like 3 months. Now they do this 6 months, and they have paternal time off now. But I think that's fantastic that they do that now. Dads are taking time off now, too. So it's not just a woman taking time off. So everybody's got to realize the whole playing field is leveled up these days. That's why I think women should be in a much better situation today. And there should be more women that are leaders today. That's why I'm surprised about the numbers dropping, like you said. I was kind of surprised about that and what's causing that. Especially nowadays, you can carry your phone around and answer an email while you're waiting for them to get off practice or whatever it is they're doing. And women are the best at multitasking. So men can't multitask like women.
That is so true, yeah. So Kim, since Atlanta Diaries is a place where aspiring women leaders learn and sometimes unlearn their definitions of success, what are your parting thoughts for these leaders as they transition into larger roles?
Yeah, just we've been talking a lot about courage. Be courageous. Don't give up. Don't be afraid. Speak your mind, because that's very important. Be your authentic self. Don't hold back. You'll regret not taking advantage of those moments, because that's why I said the biggest regrets I've had many times is because I didn't say what I wanted to say in a meeting. And if you don't get an opportunity, speak up and tell your leader you want the opportunity. Like, don't be afraid to say, hey, I want to give this a shot or give it a try. Women are waiting for permission, like for somebody to come tap them on the shoulder to say, hey, don't you want to be a leader type thing? Because every time I talk to a woman and say, have you thought about leadership? They're like, oh, thank you. Thank you for asking me that. Do you think men wait for some man to tap them on the shoulder to tell them, do you want to be a leader? No, they just go and make it happen, you know? So sometimes you just got to make it happen and go for it.
Awesome. And I really appreciate your taking out time.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity to share my experiences, and hopefully it'll help someone out there. The reason I like to do these type of things is because I want to help more women become leaders, because it is a fantastic experience helping other people grow and develop. There's nothing better out there than doing that for someone.
You've given the perfect definition of why leadership is good.
Yeah. It's definitely worth it. I wouldn't do anything different. I would definitely advise everyone to give it a shot. And it's definitely a good experience. I've had a fantastic career and I've enjoyed every minute of it.
Thank you for being a part of this incredible journey with Atlanta Diaries. I have had the privilege of hosting guests who courageously shared their most vulnerable selves with me. And even if only a small segment of these conversations can champion the journey of one person, it will be worth each and every moment. And together, we know we can create an even greater impact. So I do have a humble request for you. If you found value in these episodes, please consider sharing the podcast with your friends, family, and on your social media. I would also love to hear your thoughts and will really appreciate if you could take a moment to leave a review or rating. See you next week for another inspiring journey on Atlanta Diaries.